He will join us in about 5 to 7 minutes as well. Get his take on the Leaf game last night that he was calling. And I also want to get into these Draymond Green clips, which were pretty substantial. I mean, he's a passionate guy. He's someone that is willing to speak his mind, which I always appreciate. I do think we always need to start these conversations with the precursor, because I know it's coming. Just because I advocate for athletes and celebrities or whatever to have opinions doesn't mean I'm going to automatically agree with them. And if we right. don't agree with them, it doesn't mean that that's hypocritical, you know, because you know it's going to come. You always want people to speak their mind. Then you say, listen, I want them to speak their mind freely because I'm genuinely interested in it, but doesn't guarantee that I'm going to agree, you're going to agree, O's going to agree, Noodles, whoever it might be.
Right.
So Draymond Green is a guy that is a free thinker. He's willing to speak his mind. He loves a microphone, and he offers up, I think, compelling thoughts and opinions. And last night, Golden State was playing Cleveland, and Andre Drummond, as we know, didn't play. We had this conversation yesterday. He's already been leaked to the Raptors, and the Cavaliers have decided you're not playing anymore. Like, you're a trade asset. We can't have you get injured. We don't want you to basically be around the team in any capacity. You can show up and sit on the bench, but you're not playing. So Draymond Green went off postgame. Went off.
Right.
And had a lot of different comments that are multi-layered, and we'll play a few clips here just in a moment because I want us to give our takes on it. I think Ray would have a pretty compelling take on it as well. I will say, and you guys, I don't know if you agree with me or disagree with me, I think the crowd that he is talking to the most is his own fraternity. He's speaking up for his guys, his players.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. players care about players. Like, you guys can yeah. speak to it. You know.
I already know where you're going with this. You have no time for what he said, and me and Noodles are going to say.
No. I actually.
Because I already know what my thoughts are. I've heard the comments. I totally agree with him. But go ahead.
I didn't love his comments, I'll be
okay.
honest.
All right. Let's start. We got three clips here.
Okay.
There's some overlapping in terms of the messaging here, but let's begin with this first clip is about, he's using James Harden as an example, you know,
right.
and the heat that players take when they want out, maybe compared to how people react to when teams do what they're doing currently in Cleveland with Andre Drummond. Let's hear that from Draymond Green last night.
No one's going to fight back that James was dogging it his last days in Houston, but he was castrated for one to go to a different team, and everybody destroyed that man. And yet a team can come out and say, oh, we want to trade a guy, and then that guy is to go sit. And if he doesn't stay professional, then he's a cancer, and he's not good in someone's locker room, and he's the issue.
What do you guys think of that?
That's a money clip right there, and that's bang on. That's exactly right. You're just going to decide that I'm going somewhere else, so I'm supposed to be some professional and just be like, oh, well, okay, let me just go home then. I'll go home and wait until I'm traded. I totally agree with that.
That's fine.
And I'm glad he said it.
And I agree with that. But here's the word. Why not be professional? You're still cashing a check. You're still, like, that's the thing. Why not be professional? It's a business.
You're an independent contractor, too. Your own career is
But what he's hand. Saying is he has some inside information that they're trying to put the screws to this guy and make him look like a piece of trash because he's not being all rosy and doing whatever. That's the inside information that Draymond Green has. He's not just saying that this guy's showing up in his underpants at practice and doing that. He knows what's going on here. I think this guy's passionate. But I don't think he would speak up in this circumstance if he didn't have the background information.
No, he's not flying off the handle. That's not
who
he is.
No, but I took it that he was saying we all knew what James Harden did. Mm-hmm. He wore a fat suit where he looked like one. I'm joking.
And he admitted
but,
that.
You know
though.
What I mean?
He admitted
like,
that.
He
everyone
dogged
knows he
it
was
in
dogging.
His last day. Everyone knows that,
yep.
right? But then he's saying, on the other hand, the organization has told Drummond, like, don't come near us. We're going to sort this out. Go home. The only thing that I would disagree is why not be a professional in both sides, in both situations? Like, this is a business. You get paid a lot of money, but you're a piece of meat. You're an asset. And I know that there are feelings involved, and I respect that. But I looked at it like that was the only thing, the one word I had a problem with. Well, why are you mad for not being a professional? Well, you're still, this is your job. This is your profession. Yes, you treat people with respect. I understand that. And I think that's, to your point, what you're saying. Oh, there's things probably behind the scenes that is a lack of respect. That I would have a problem with. But that's the only word that got me. When I was listening to that this morning, I'm like, well, yeah, you can act like a professional,
and it's
because
that
is your job. It is your, in your best interest to act like a professional regardless of how you're being treated. And then you can get retribution, or you'll come out smelling like a rose if you take the high road. That's the way I
right, which is not
I
always easy
things.
To do. And I
it's
get
not.
That. It's not always easy to do, especially if it becomes toxic. The relationship really gets ugly, and you know, publicly things are getting out and everyone knows where they're coming from, but you're putting an anonymous source behind it or whatever.
Right, right.
I would say my reaction to the way players are you know, responded to, or the reaction they gain from wanting out compared to the way teams get a reaction when they decide they're pushing someone out. I think his gripe is totally understandable and accurate, but I think it's misdirected. I don't think that's at the league. That's at the media and the fans. It's the media and the fans that carve up players for wanting out, who call them cancers without really knowing what's going on. It's fans who get emotional and say, "You're not turning your back on the team. You're turning back your back on me as a fan." And I think if the NBA, if we're being honest here, the NBA has allowed, you know, the players to take over the league in large part in terms of movement, more so than any other league.
Right.
I mean, and yes, did Harden take heat? Absolutely. Brooklyn still went out and got him. Guess where he wanted to play?
Brooklyn.
Did Anthony Davis take heat? Absolutely. Guess where he wanted to go? The Lakers. They went out and got him. He's still with the Lakers. So, yeah, you take some heat. But I don't think the league is penalizing these guys. I don't think it's the league that is taking run after run after run necessarily as much as it is the media and the fans.
Perception, yeah.
The perception. I will say he went on to comment on the imbalance in terms of penalties for speaking publicly about a situation. And I do think he's spot on about that. The fact that teams could come out and say, "We're done with this guy, not playing again, we're going to move him, no fine, no issue." But if a player comes out and goes, "I've decided it's in my best interest to leave, $50,000 or $100,000. Right. That to me is bogus, and I think Draymond Green was spot on. Joining us down the Maple Toyota hotline here is our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. Ray, I'm not sure if you saw the Draymond Green comments or heard them. I'm fascinated by this, and you know, this is a thought-provoking topic. He's a passionate guy. He's not someone that flies off the handle. I think he was doing it for the benefit of the players, you know, speaking on behalf of the players. But what do you make of this? You know, the comments that the teams get off the hook when they want to ship someone out, but the players, if they ever want to take their own careers into their own hands and move on, they're labeled a million different words, and they get chastised left, right, and center.
Well, it, you know, I can compare this rather microscopic topic, right, to whenever there's a collective bargaining agreement. Every time, before long, you know, it starts out with billionaire owners and millionaire players, and then before long, the players are wrong. Now, of course, I've got a, you know, I've got a built-in bias here, right, as being an ex-player, but inevitably, the players should just be happy to have a place to play. That happens all the time. And I think we can go back through any of the lockouts or the strike or whatever, and that's pretty much what ends up happening. So I don't think Draymond Green is wrong at all that, you know, look, you're drafted by a team, you're signed by a team, the team decides they've got a better player or they don't want you anymore, and poof, off you go. You get a phone call, and they tell you to leave, and that's it. And the players feel, of course, that they don't have any recourse other than to do what these star players have done. And don't think for a moment that this isn't far away from coming to hockey.
Of course.
Like it's going to happen. I don't know who or where or when, but it's going to happen somewhere where some star player is going to say, you know what, and it's not going to be quietly done. They're going to say, hey, by the way, I'm done here. I want to move. And then we're going to have to, we'll discuss it in greater detail. But the way the CBA is set up, the way that the league rules are, players have very little freedom of movement. And it's probably, I would say, in the league's best interest to have it that way. So there is a competitive balance. Like, how many teams can win in the NBA?
Oh, five? It's a handful every year. And other years, there's
right.
been one or two.
And so that's not great. That's not great for them. I mean, super teams are awesome. They're fun to cheer for and against because everybody cheers for them until they have had enough of them, and then they cheer for everybody else. But I kind of like that more teams have a chance to win. I can see the economics of that. And so I think that leads to exactly what we're talking about, is that, no, you can't have the freedom to go wherever you want, because we'll end up with four teams with a chance to win, which was back in the day, which was kind of what happened. It was the teams that had the most money and could spend whatever they needed to spend.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I would go a step further in terms of the dynamics between the two parties, the players and the league, or the players and the owners. Ultimately, it's an employer and an employee. And there's another clip here where he starts talking about, you know, the players should have the same rights as the owners. That's just not realistic. It's not the way business works with any business.
But no, he's wrong there.
He's wrong in there.
It's like the owner is the owner. He's not called the left defenseman.
Right.
He's the owner.
Right. And he's got the ultimate trump card, which you guys can attest to based on your own CBA negotiations. This is where I was concerned that Draymond might be biting off a little bit more than he wants to chew. Because if it gets to a point where you want, you know, the ability to say, I'm going here, I'm going there, I want to do this, do that, the ultimate trump card, as you guys know, is the owners come back and say, all right, no more guaranteed contracts. How do we feel about that? And then everyone shuts up. And everyone's that. You know, because Drummond's still making $28 million, whether he plays or not.
That's where I went, guys. And that's why, I mean, I understand there's real people here, there's real feelings involved in that. But ultimately, a lot of these transactions are treated like a business. You are a piece of meat. But these players, whether it was Harden or Drummond, they're still cashing a check. And, I mean, Kyrie Irving is cashing a check. This guy's on Zoom calls for political rallies and stuff while his team's playing.
You know,
like, I mean, I understand, and I thought it was fascinating what Draymond Green had to say. He is a passionate guy. He's a well-thought-out individual, but I just didn't like the one word, you know, being a professional. Like, being a professional is playing the long game, if you ask me. That's just my the way I view it.
Yeah.
Is
yep.
I'm still getting paid. Yeah, I don't like my circumstance, but I'm going to, behind the scenes, they may know the way I feel, but why take it public? Why, you know, make the Harden thing? I thought he deserved a lot of the criticism, and even Draymond said that, because he brought it on himself.
He brought it on himself the way he played. Yeah, he did, and there's no dancing around it, and the media and the fans are always going to have those reactions. You can't control it. It's
right.
what comes with the territory. Speaking of which, last night you had the ability to call a game where one team is in first place and leading 5-1 with 10 seconds to go in the second period. The other team is in last place. They end up winning 6-5 in overtime. And you know how Toronto works, and you know, Leaf fans are trying to wrap their historical minds around this. Some people suggesting this is worse than the David Ayers game. You know, watching it play out the way it played out last night, what sticks out to you almost 24 hours later?
Well, okay, so when Matthew scored to make it 5-1, I'm like, oh boy. Like, just from a broadcast standpoint,
right.
I'm like, now what?
Big picture.
And then, oh, man, we're going to be, you know, because that game was going into both markets, too.
Yeah.
So Gordon and I were, that game was also in the Ottawa market. So you've got to be mindful that there's Senators fans that are watching this game, too, and you got to broadcast it, you know, not just as a Leaf broadcaster, and that matters. You know, Noodles, you know, like it yeah. matters. You've got to be a little more big picture, as you called it, in yeah. a game like that. Well, Tavares hands that puck away, and, well, first of all, Freddie tries to make a 70-foot pass. There's 15 seconds left in the period. You're up 5-1. Do you really
no
need
kidding.
To try that?
No kidding.
Just hold
yeah,
the damn
right.
puck.
That's a great
and,
point.
Yeah.
You know, it's 5-1. Just chew it, and then you can go in, and everybody can have a few yucks. So he turns it over. Tavares, you know, throws that pizza to, you know, to Paul, and it ends up in the net. It's 5-2. Not for a second do I think that that's a big deal.
Me neither. Right.
I think we all
we
were
described
sitting
there. It as the Chia Pet giveaway, where you didn't think anything of it, and then it just kept growing and growing and growing.
It's the perfect verb.
How about as that Chia Pet's growing? Do you think somebody noticed that Zub was coming out of the penalty box?
Yeah,
they probably never heard of him.
Like, well, that's the thing.
In the league. Hey.
Well, they know now.
We had an internal text like, "Who the hell is this guy?"
Honestly, I'm like, "That's weird."
Did you guys buy what I told you? I just threw something out there, and I said, "That's Dana Zubris' son. He just took the brush off the end of."
I had to look it up. I did a Wikipedia search. Yeah, like you may have got me with that one. Never heard of the guy.
But that's
nice
the
move.
Same penalty guys, right? They gave up the shorty, or they gave up the shorty, and then. It's not a shorty because he's out of the box, but it's 40 seconds into the period. You think somebody might have noticed that, hey, guess what? It's, you know, early in the period, that guy's going to be coming out. So now it's 5-3. And I remember thinking, still lots of time, you know, they're still up by 2 goals. And then once the game was gone, it felt like they could never get it back. Like they just, you know, the game got loose and scrambly and, all of a sudden, Brown scores, and it's 5-4, you know, and, you know, I mean, just still, they're within a minute of, you know, of somehow surviving the game, and Dadonov knocks that thing out of the air. So, like, for 39 minutes, I actually thought they played quite well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, that last 21 minutes, though, that erased more than what they had done well in the first 39. Like, that looked like the old Leafs right there.
Well, that's it. We've done it so many times, Ray. And I said that earlier, that the reactions, it's PTSD for Leaf fans. You're like, here we go again. Blown leads, no attention to detail, no maturity. Freddie can't just end it. You know, I don't – you can go through each goal and say, well, yeah, Freddie, you can't you know, breakaway, tip, tic-tac-toe in the slot, Brown scores. But you're like, can you just make sure they don't score 4 on you here? You know, you got a 5-1 lead. Can you just stop it? And that was the issue. Is doesn't have to be relevant. Likely won't be on Sunday. If they win Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday in Montreal, it's completely irrelevant. You move on from it. Who cares? If it leads to a bit of a spiral, then that's where the Leaf memories start to become more and more clear.
Well, you would think, like, at some point, if you can get yourself into that mindset, and maybe I'm a bad guy to be talking about this because I never got myself in this mindset of just check. You're up 5-1. Now it's 5-2. Just check. You win. You're a better team. You're going to get the same number of chances, and you're going to score more than them if you get the same number of chances. But all you got to do is check. It's like they can't, as a team, get themselves into that mindset enough. Yet, if you look at the previous, I don't know how many games they played in February, they only gave up 9 goals.
Right.
Like, this has been better. Like, defensively, by a long shot, they haven't given up as many shots or chances for most of the season. And then it just came down like a house of cards yesterday. I mean, like, that was really something to see, actually.
Who do you think's the most kind of... I don't know about this question. I kind of doubt my question sometimes. Who do you think is kind of
the
most...
start. This is Larry King right here.
Way to sell that one over.
Imagine that. Imagine
who do you think is kind of the most anxious, Ray, to see what the response is? Is it Shanny and Dubas? Is it Sheldon? Or is it the players themselves? It's actually a pretty good question.
That's a great question.
Good for you.
Yeah, had you not submarined yourself on that question, I would have thought, damn.
I don't know.
Good.
Sometimes it just my brain just sits, there's a lot of stuff going on in there, and I'm like, I don't even know if this one's going to fly. Anyway, it turned out to be
I think it's the coach because they've been teaching and preaching and talking about this way of playing, and then it went up in flames one night. I think he wants to know, like, do the guys really believe in this? Because if they do, they'll be really sharp. They might not win 9-0, but they'll be really sharp next game. The puck will move quick. They'll check. They'll be tight together. Like all the things that really they've done for a lot of the season, even though it's not, you know, maybe as polished as it might look sometimes, or we might want it to look. I think that to me is the most, I won't say pressing, but the most curious point of the game of the next game, is to see same team, same guys, can we get back to what we had been doing pretty much, you know, for the previous month or so.
Ray, I'll follow up O's question and not even just talk about who's nervous. Like, who would you circle? Or is there a couple players that you would circle that you'd like to see, you know, just a little bit more from, or guys that have to establish more consistency, like with the
Leafs?
Yeah,
you know what, Noodles? I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, like, most of the games played at 5-on-5, and the second line is non-existent.
What do you see in there, Ray? Like, what is it like? We talked about it earlier. Do they have to put Marner back with Tavares? Like, we all know where Noodles was going down, what road he was going down. Yeah. What do you see there? How does it get fixed?
See, to me, it's like they don't attack with any purpose. They're not connected. Okay, remember when you would get a pass out on the wing, and you're like, where the hell is my centerman? I'm standing out here, and he's 60 feet away. And when you struggle and you don't feel it, like you're not connected, that's what happens all the time. Or as a centerman, I'd get the puck, I'd go over the blue line, I'd look to my left, no winger. Look to my right, no winger. Where the hell is everybody? You're too far ahead. It's like those two guys in particular, because it's unfair, you know, Hyman just got back there, and I do think he's going to help that line. But it's like they're not connected very much. It's like they're playing a different game. One guy's playing one way, one guy's playing another. And to me, it hasn't looked comfortable. It hasn't looked dangerous at all most of the year.
No, it really hasn't. And like, they've been in the league long enough, Tavares and Nylander, we're well aware of how they play the game and how they're most effective. And John Tavares in particular has been scoring goals from within 5 feet of the crease since he was 5 years old, and will continue to do that throughout the rest of his career. I just find he never has the puck around the net. Like, it's never on his stick around the net. Like, that's where he's dangerous.
His line mate's involved in that, too, because he gets bumped off it, and he doesn't really fight to get it back. So then it's like, okay, who the hell has the puck, and how do you get it back?
It's like they're always chasing the puck. And Tavares is guilty of that, too. Seems like you isolate
him. That's where I think Hyman can help, is by just, he'll get to the puck first and hold it, and then you can extend a little bit of zone time.
Yeah.
They don't ever have, well, I'll say ever, that's wrong, but they don't often have a shift where you go, man, they were in there for 40 seconds.
No.
And they just got it back and wore them down and had a couple of chances. Oh, they didn't score, but that was a great shift. There's been two, almost non-existent of that.
Two things I would say, like, Tavares, like Hayes, you talked about at the start of the season, and there's no numbers tied to this, but when you look at Tavares, he looked like he had that jump. He looked like he had, I don't know if it was an extra step, but that step back, where last year, you know, the eye test again, just a slight hesitation in his game. I think that's kind of, when I'm watching him, I see a slight hesitation in his game. With Nylander, I see all the skill, but I don't see him getting in the middle of the ice. How Nylander was dangerous was him taking middle ice, because he's strong off the wall, he's strong on his stick, and he's got a good shot. And the middle of ice has never been easier to get to in today's game, because you can't hook, you can't hold, you can't slash, because you just draw penalties. So that's why guys like Matthews who take middle ice, there's no recourse. He's going to get a shot, or he's going to get his hand slashed or hooked or something. Like, those are the two things that, again, that's my eye test. I don't have the numbers to suggest that, but like, in watching Tavares, I saw the first 8 games or something where he had that jump. He looks a little hesitant. Maybe he's in his own head right now, maybe thinking the game. And you know, when you think the game, you hesitate because you end up being behind it instead of, like, thinking, where do I need to be? Where do I want to go?
Reactive instead of
reacting.
Proactive.
Noodles, I was just going to bring up, I don't know what that's like for a goalie when you get in your own head, but when you kind of lose your mojo or your confidence or whatever, you're always thinking about, okay, where's that next play, instead of just getting to the next play. He doesn't need to overthink it. He's done this for a long time, and he's been really successful at it. And Nylander last year did get to the middle of the ice. He did get close to the net. It's not like he can't, but for whatever reason, it's like they're now paralyzing themselves. I don't know what it's like for the goalie, what it would be for you, but for the forwards, without question, it's you overthink it, you start to move less, you start to watch more, and eventually you never have the puck.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. And listen, they've got a chance at redemption tomorrow night. You got Ottawa tomorrow, Ottawa Thursday, at Montreal Saturday. And the mood is going to change throughout the course of the season. We know that. It's happening throughout the country. And last night was just one of those games. And it's one we'll remember, quite frankly, for quite some time. But doesn't ultimately need to be, you know, the big curse or anything along those lines.
No, it sure was not surprised, or sure not expected at 5-1.
No way. Right. No chance. Yeah. No. Based on all the context of both teams, where it was played, what's going on, no chance.
Right.
We'll see.
I got to say this, though, before I scoot here. I also learned that there is an actual elephant named Jumbo.
Really?
Gord brought it up in a game, and I'm like, where do you get this stuff from? And then all of a sudden, my Twitter feed is just piled on with people sending Wikipedia from Jumbo the elephant that died a tragic death in a train accident over 100 years ago in St. Thomas. And there's a statue there of this elephant. And
really?
Yeah, that was like outside of the game being turning into a debacle. That was like quite a high point for me there yesterday.
Yeah, I like that you called that, Gord. You're like, half the time I don't know if you're being honest or not.
Well, I'm like, what are you doing with this story? And then I look it up and I'm like, hey, man, he's right on it. Yeah. And Michael Farber sent me a Sports Illustrated article he wrote about Joe Thornton, and in it he goes through the legend of Jumbo the Elephant. And it's a real thing.
Okay. Well, there you go. Take it to the bank. Homework for the boys tonight. We got to look into that.
There you go. You can sit there. Oak can ponder his next question, and you can read about Jumbo the Elephant.
That's exactly what we'll do. Full breakdown tomorrow at 5:05. Good stuff, buddy.
Have a great day, guys. See ya.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. If you're looking to lower your car payments, downsize your vehicle, or trade in two cars for one, visit MapleToyota.com or book an in-person appointment.